Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Putin, it's the Pentagon calling. Things are worse than they're telling you. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
Deceiving the dictator. The new U.S. intelligence that Putin's inner circle is afraid to tell him of battlefield failures, hiding from him the impact of sanctions.
Mr. Putin has not been fully informed.
And Russian troops repositioning but not going home.
The airstrikes have not stopped. Not at all.
Severe weather, heavy damage in Arkansas and Texas.
I sat straight up in bed and said, oh my God, we're hit by a tornado.
Where the storm is headed and the threat of tornadoes tonight. Bruce Willis stepping away from acting. The star's family revealing his medical condition. What we're learning about aphasia. She was kidnapped, raped, and murdered. 42 years later, her killer ID'd.
She was real. She meant the world to me.
How they used the DNA technique that helped capture the Golden State Killer. Facebook's campaign to turn the public against TikTok. The Biden administration lifting a major border restriction. And just in from the Academy, what Will Smith refused to do after he slapped Chris Rock.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Vladimir Putin's top advisors are lying to him about the invasion. They aren't telling him how terribly it's really going because they're afraid to give him the truth. That's according to a new U.S. intelligence assessment from the Pentagon. Of course, the rest of the world has seen the outgunned and outnumbered Ukrainians make mincemeat out of the mighty Russian war machine and push the invaders back in some key areas. We've seen images like these near the city of Kyiv today of destroyed and abandoned Russian armored vehicles, the bodies of Russian soldiers left behind to rot on the streets. All the while, Vladimir Putin, the ex-KGB intelligence officer, has apparently been left in the dark. A U.S. official says accurate information about Russia's failures on the battlefield and the impact of the crippling sanctions is not making its way to Putin himself. Putin didn't even know his military was using and losing conscripts in Ukraine, the official says, showing a clear breakdown in the flow of accurate information to the Russian president. The U.S. official says there's now a rift and tensions between Putin and his own military leaders because he feels like they misled him. The Russians do continue to shell and bombard areas near Kyiv and Chernihiv in northern Ukraine, even after they promised to drastically reduce attacks there. This is a local market in Chernihiv, hit by Russian strikes just today. The local governor says Russian forces shelled his city all night, damaging homes and civilian targets. Today, the Pentagon reports there are zero signs that the Russians are de-escalating, and the Russian troops that are moving away from Kyiv are only repositioning, possibly for another major offensive elsewhere.
If the Russians were really serious about de-escalating and the way they spun this yesterday, that they're trying to take the pressure off, well, then send them home. And that's not what they're doing, at least not yet.
In southeastern Ukraine, these new satellite images show sheer devastation in the city of Mariupol. Keep in mind, this is a Russian-speaking city that Putin claimed he was liberating, his brothers. Instead, he turned homes and apartment buildings into ash. This is the theater where around 300 civilians are now feared dead after a Russian airstrike. And these are massive lines of crowds of people waiting for food outside a grocery store. In a new video just tonight, the Ukrainian president Volodymyr Zelensky is vowing to fight for every meter of Ukrainian soil and not give up anything. We begin our coverage with Ali Aruzi, reporting live tonight in western Ukraine. Ali.
Hi, Shep. Well, Vladimir Zelensky confirming what U.S. officials and his own military commanders have been saying, that this is not a withdrawal but a repositioning and a rotation of Russian troops. And that's because the Russian assault on Kyiv has been such a disaster. Not only have they not been able to take the capital, but they've lost control of many of the surrounding areas that they controlled early on in this conflict. So the shift of focus may now be on the Donbass region, where the Pentagon has confirmed that 1,000 foreign mercenaries are backing Russian troops in that area. There's probably going to be some heavy fighting there, but it also underscores that the Russian military might has shrunk. They have faced fierce resistance by the Ukrainians, and that's giving the Ukrainian military and the Ukrainian civilians renewed confidence in this battle that is showing no signs of abating anytime soon.
Ali, President Biden spoke with President Zelensky today. Do we know what came of their call?
Well, they would have spoken about that $500 million in humanitarian and military aid, about new defensive systems that they may send here, and about those six shipments that have already come to Ukraine with more to come. But Zelensky would have probably reiterated what he said so many times, that they need more military assistance. They need tanks. They need planes. They need defensive systems to stave off the Russian assault. They probably would have also spoken about those peace talks yesterday that have produced no tangible results as of yet. And that is not least of all because Vladimir Putin has shown no signs of wanting to end this war anytime soon. But apparently there are going to be new peace talks on the 1st of March, but they're only going to be online.
Ali Aruzi, live early this Thursday morning in Lviv. And the fight back is happening not just around the capital. We've seen Ukrainian forces fighting back and recapturing territory in other parts of the country. This was a Russian military encampment on the outskirts of Kharkiv, not far from the Russian border. Richard Engel was there today.
This was a Russian camp, and you could see they had all of their weapons here, dugout positions, and they were bombed. There's still some bodies in this area, and they left a lot of their equipment behind after what appears to have been a devastating attack on their position. There's nothing left.
Ukrainian forces overran the Russian troops and took back the territory in the surrounding area after a big battle just days ago. NBC News analyst Clint Watts now to break down where the Ukrainians are gaining ground. Clint?
Let's start here looking in the north, in and around Kyiv. This is where we heard reports yesterday that the Russians were talking about withdrawing forces from Kyiv. There's a lot of confusion about this, and it's hard to say what they're really doing, but let's just recap. Here, the Ukrainian military has taken back some ground, and this has really put the Russians into defensive positions along here. Separately, there are some troops moving, but there's several different scenarios that might play out. First, if Russian troops are moving up here to Belarus, essentially going up to Belarus, they could be just resupplying and may show up back on the battlefield here. Separately, what the Russians might be trying to do is what's called a retrograde operation, essentially maintaining some offense and some fighting here to allow other elements to essentially retreat and move towards Belarus without taking more losses. The bigger picture, though, is what we're talking about here in the east. Here in the east is essentially where the battle is really going to. And note, in the Pentagon, they're talking about maybe troops will be redeployed from Kyiv over here to the east because they need more manpower. They're running short on manpower. They're too spread out on too many fronts. This is the battle area here from Kharkiv, where you see the Russians trying to drive towards the southeast, and from Luhansk, trying to drive to the northwest because they would like to secure all of Donbas. Remember, this is where Vladimir Putin talked about his initial justification for invading. That brings us to the real hot spot in this battle, which is Izium. Again, if you look in closer, you see the Russians trying to join from their forces up here to the northwest with their forces down here to the southeast. In terms of the big picture, this week, what we need to really watch for is manpower. April 1st is the new conscription date for the next round of recruits in Russia. If they go big, it could mean that they're really trying to send more combat power in for an extended period.
Clint Watts, thanks. For weeks now, we've been seeing Putin bomb and besiege Ukrainian cities, target civilians, and abduct local leaders. This particular playbook of terror to crush adjacent nations is not something new. We've seen this before. Look at these images. Burned out cars, bombed out buildings, and charred desolation. Look familiar? They could be Ukraine's capital of Kyiv today or the bombed out city of Mariupol, but these images, these are from Chechnya in the early 1990s. In the wake of the Soviet collapse, the small territory in southern Russia declared independence from Moscow. Russia invaded, and though the Chechens fought valiantly, at the very breaking point, they pushed back Russian troops. They were eventually pummeled into submission. They remain under Russian-appointed leadership today. Ukraine, of course, is much larger and in many ways different from Chechnya. But the wars there were the first time that Vladimir Putin deployed his military game plan to reassert Russian dominance in the region. Anatol Levin now, author, journalist, now a senior research fellow at the Quincy Institute. Anatol, thanks so much. You covered the Chechen wars in the 1990s. What do you make of these comparisons between then and now? Is there anything from that experience that could, I don't know, predict what happens next?
Well, the parallel is that of urban warfare. As a number of people, including myself, predicted before this war, the key question was going to be whether the Ukrainian defenders would be like the Chechens and they would dig themselves into Ukrainian cities and hold out there. Because if so, that would face Russia both with huge casualties among the attacking forces, but also would face Russia with the military necessity of bombarding civilian areas in order to dislodge the defenders. That, of course, is precisely what happened in Grozny in the 90s. It must be said that it is what happens in all urban warfare. It is the tragic nature of that kind of conflict.
Anatol, I'm sure you've heard some energy experts who say they think Putin's just after the gas fields in the east. A lot of money there, a lot of power. Do you see any scenario in which Putin plays this off as though he didn't miscalculate and that he gets what he wants in the end, the gas?
I can see how Putin might try to play it that way, but I don't think it's actually true. Or certainly it wasn't a motive for invading, because the figures, you know, now being given for the gas of eastern Ukraine are very, very speculative. They're hugely, hugely in excess of the proven gas reserves. And, you know, if you look at the Russian reasons for invading, well, actually, you know, they're set out pretty well in the memoir of William Burns, the CIA director who was ambassador in Moscow before. You know, Russia has made them very clear over the years.
The Pentagon's reporting that Putin's not getting accurate information on what's really going on in Ukraine. You've written about Putin's inner circle. Are they afraid to tell him, as the Pentagon claims?
I think that may very well be the case, yes. I mean, it's absolutely clear that this Russian invasion was based on terrible intelligence. And I think, well, it's maybe his inner circle aren't ready to tell him, but it's also that, of course, he is excluded from his inner circle. You know, all the independent voices who could have warned him about what was going to happen. Now, of course, this is not wholly unique to Russia. We saw much the same thing in the run-up to the American invasion of Iraq, when, you know, intelligence arguing against that was also disregarded and overruled. But of course, in Russia, an authoritarian system, this syndrome is even worse.
Anatol Levin, thank you. Communities in the Deep South bracing for tornadoes. Some have already caused damage, including in the Mississippi State Capitol. Who's in the path now and overnight? We're tracking the storms next. Treating ALS. There's a new experimental drug, and it's creating controversy. Today, experts for the FDA weigh in. And a new issue in the Michigan governor plot to kidnap trial, as some key players get death threats. And the FBI sets its sights on a house of interest.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The National Weather Service confirms a tornado touchdown just over an hour ago in Jackson, Mississippi. Our local affiliate there, WLBT, reports trees on houses and downed power lines across the state capital region. Storm trackers following the path right outside of Jackson here as the threats just keep moving east toward Alabama. It's part of another round of dangerous spring severe weather striking the Deep South. Nighttime tornadoes, yet again a threat this evening, just a week after a deadly twister battered New Orleans. That city and much of that region under a tornado watch right now. In fact, 29 million people are listed at risk of severe storms, 8 million under tornado watches. The National Weather Service predicts it's the worst of it will hit Mississippi and parts of Alabama and previously Louisiana. One tornado already touched down in northwest Arkansas. It destroyed the gym at an elementary school in Springdale. The police department there says 7 people were hurt in the storm, with one still critical. The National Weather Service reports this tornado looks to them like an EF2, meaning winds at 135 miles an hour. Adam Del Rosso, now senior meteorologist at AccuWeather. Adam, this thing is moving and fast.
It really is. These storms pushing eastward at about 50 to 60 miles per hour. And those are the same winds that they're tapping into, producing all of that destructive damage. And this is pretty much the same exact setup that we had last week with this low pressure system moving into the Midwest, a cold front trailing southward from it, taking advantage of all of the instability in the atmosphere. The worst of the storms right now across southern Illinois, eastern Mississippi, down to about New Orleans, which, as you just mentioned, was just dealing with severe weather last weekend. We've got that tornado watch in place right now. A couple of severe thunderstorm warnings just to the north of town. So the worst tornado threat right now across northeastern Mississippi into western Tennessee. And you can see that is going to push into central Tennessee, central Alabama as we head into the overnight hours. That latest tornado watch taking us into the 1 a.m. hour. So we need to make sure we have a way to wake up when those warnings are issued. Downloading the AccuWeather app, great tool to have. These storms, in addition to the tornado threat, could be bringing damaging straight line wind gusts upwards of 90 miles per hour. That's how fast some of these winds are in the environment right now. A lot of moisture streaming northward from the Gulf of Mexico as well, and that is going to lead to the flash flooding threat. Future radar taking us hour by hour, shifting these storms into eastern Tennessee as we get after midnight tonight across southern Alabama as well. Eventually, overnight tonight, Atlanta, we're going to get in on that severe weather threat. Early tomorrow morning, Charlotte, we're going to have those storms pushing on through. And the threat from South Carolina, South Georgia, into the Florida Panhandle is going to come with those damaging wind gusts upwards of 65 miles per hour. Thankfully, the tornado threat a little bit lower for our Thursday, but we'll still need to watch out for some flash flooding. Even across parts of the Mid-Atlantic, up into the Northeast, upstate New York, we'll have to watch out for some thunderstorms with damaging wind gusts upwards of 80 miles per hour, isolated tornadoes, flooding downpours, and some hail can't be rolled out either. And even tonight, across parts of the Ohio Valley into the Great Lakes, where we might not necessarily be dealing with severe thunderstorms, we're still going to have some pretty significant wind gusts that could lead to power outage issues, especially closer to the lakes where you don't have as much friction from the land slowing that water down. We're talking wind gusts upwards of 60 miles per hour. Shep, another couple of busy days for us here.
Looks like it. Adam Del Rosso with the AccuWeather forecast. An update now on a story we've been following over the last 2 days. Police in Pennsylvania now say 6 people died in that massive pileup on an interstate there. That's up from 3 confirmed deaths yesterday, 24 others known hurt. Police first reported 40 to 60 vehicles were involved. Now they say it was 80 cars, trucks, and semis that crashed into each other during the sometimes fiery collisions. The crashes happened on Monday morning on I-81 in Schuylkill County, about 100 miles northwest of Philly.
My car is gone.
Cops blamed a sudden and blinding snowstorm. The highway reopened just today, 45 hours after the crashes. A brazen attack on a woman in New York City. The suspect beating her on the head over and over again with a hammer. Now, a month later, she's telling her story. Facebook taking on one of its biggest rivals, the allegations into how the company tried to turn the public against TikTok.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
A woman in New York City describing the terror she felt as a man bashed her over the head with a hammer more than a dozen times. Nina Rothschild says she remembers basically every moment of that beating. She described what happened in a sit-down interview with our station NBC4 New York.
Never saw my attacker, but I remember, you know, starting to go down the subway steps and feeling this blow to my head, which I initially thought was a baseball bat. I kept yelling, stop, stop, stop.
That attack happened last month. This surveillance camera captured it on video. A man followed Rothschild down the stairs, kicked her, hit her with a cane, then started this, bashing her overhead. That's a hammer in his hand. The suspect then stole her bag and left her helpless.
In retrospect, I think, like, why did he need to hit me over the head with a hammer up to 14 times when he could simply have asked me for my bag or showed me the hammer and said, if you don't give me your bag, I'm going to hit you with this?
It's a fair question. Rothschild says the beating fractured her skull. She says she woke up in a hospital after surgery, mentally sharp, but she couldn't walk.
And the physical and occupational therapists were asking me, what are your goals? I said, well, I want my life back, you know, and thanks to everybody's help, I am taking my life back.
And police, they arrested a suspect just days after the attack. He pleaded not guilty to attempted murder. He has a long criminal history, including kidnapping, robberies, and drug crimes. Rothschild says she doesn't plan to take the subway anytime soon because she's still recovering physically and because, frankly, she's still afraid. The White House planning to put an end to a pandemic-era policy at the southern border. Tonight, the growing concerns that Homeland Security simply isn't ready for the influx of migrants that will likely cause. And Bruce Willis, the stunning announcement that he's stepping away from acting. The medical condition revealed today by his family and the other celebrities who face the same battle as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. The biggest social media company in the world trying to take down one of its biggest competitors. Meta, formerly known as Facebook, hired a digital consulting firm to launch a campaign to turn the public against TikTok. That's according to a new report in the Washington Post. The consulting firm called Targeted Victory. The Post reports it's routinely advised Meta officials over the years. According to internal emails reviewed by the Post, a Targeted Victory director told staff that the group needs to get the message out that while Meta is the current punching bag, TikTok is the real threat, especially as a foreign-owned app that is number one in sharing data that young teens are using. Targeted Victory, that consulting firm, reportedly planted op-eds and letters to editors in local and regional newspapers all across the country, including the Denver Post. One letter raised concerns about China deliberately collecting behavioral data on our kids. TikTok, owned by a Chinese firm. According to the Post, targeted victory didn't stop there. It reportedly pushed news stories blaming dangerous online trends on TikTok. Remember the one, the slap a teacher TikTok challenge? TikTok reported that challenge didn't even exist on its platform, remember? But according to an investigation by the Gimlet Podcast Network, the rumor of the viral trend actually started on Facebook. Meta is pushing back. The company spokesperson defending the campaign by saying, Meta believes all platforms, including TikTok, should face a level of scrutiny consistent with their growing success. And Targeted Victory calls the story manufactured and says it's proud of its work with Meta. The Washington Post tech columnist Taylor Lorenz now, she's one of the journalists who broke the story. Taylor, with the big push in the metaverse, Mark Zuckerberg is clearly looking to bring more young people to the platform. Is it going after TikTok? Just another prong in his strategy.
Absolutely. I think Mark Zuckerberg, as we've seen, will stop at nothing to take down a competitor. TikTok is obviously the biggest competitor right now because it has a level of cultural relevance and cachet among young people and, frankly, user engagement that Facebook just doesn't have. I mean, recently, for the first time ever, Facebook actually lost users, its last quarter. So they're definitely on the defensive.
So on the one hand, Taylor, Facebook is clearly threatened in some way by TikTok. But on the other, as you noted in the article, Zuckerberg has pointed to TikTok to prove that Facebook is not a monopoly. Does your reporting indicate that TikTok has now become more of a concerning thing than a useful thing to Zuckerberg?
I think he likes to play at both sides, right? He loves to say, oh, look, you know, TikTok is competition. It's a big company and we've got to defend ourselves, you know, but we're equally matched. But then behind closed doors, as we see with this campaign, he'll aggressively kind of do anything to smear his competitors and kind of mitigate their success and make sure that they, even though, you know, they're becoming bigger and bigger in America, they never really get that leg up on Facebook.
The report in the Washington Post, Taylor Lorenz, thank you. More workers test positive for drugs, and that's what's topping CNBC on the Money. American workers testing positive for drugs hitting a two-decade high last year. That's new today from the lab giant Quest Diagnostics. 4.6% of workers screened tested positive for drugs. That's up nearly a third from an all-time low just 10 years ago. And as you might imagine, marijuana use drove the increase. Positivity for pot up 50% since 2017. Roughly one in five American workers runs out of money between paychecks. That's according to a new survey from financial well-being site Salary Finance. With less money in their pockets, nearly a quarter of those polled said it's harder to afford necessary expenses, and a full third said they cannot build savings. And the vacuum cleaner maker Dyson out with their first wearable tech, and it's something else. Headphones that also serve as an air purifier. They're calling it Dyson Zone, and it's expected to be available this fall. No comment from Bain. On Wall Street, the Dow down 65, snapping a four-day win streak. S&P down 29, the NASDAQ down 177. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news.
An experimental drug used to treat ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. The medical community divided, and today, a roadblock from the FDA. A New York woman finds out who killed her older sister 42 years after the murder. But first, one of the biggest movie stars in the world stepping away from acting.
Bruce Willis's family announced just this morning that the actor had been diagnosed with aphasia. According to the Mayo Clinic, that's a medical condition that can affect a person's ability to speak, write, and understand language, both verbal and written. In a really heartbreaking post on Instagram, his family writes in part that his diagnosis is impacting his cognitive abilities. They add that this is a really challenging time for the family, and they're so appreciative of your continued love, compassion, and support. CNBC's Perry Russum now on the diagnosis and what it means for the Hollywood legend.
Welcome to the party, pal!
The actor who helped us see dead people.
Dead people like in graves.
And saved Earth from an asteroid.
Prepare the world for bad news.
Is stepping away from acting. after a diagnosis of aphasia.
Aphasia is language impairment.
The National Aphasia Association reports the most common cause is stroke. It's not clear what happened to Willis. The NAA reports aphasia affects about 2 million Americans of all ages, races, and genders. It's more common than Parkinson's disease and cerebral palsy. Symptoms include speaking in short, incomplete sentences, speaking in sentences that don't make sense, and not understanding other people's conversation.
A lot of aphasia patients, they can do everything almost in their daily life, except for the communication, which they have trouble with.
In some cases, rehabilitation is possible. Aphasia has affected other actors, including Emilia Clarke and Sharon Stone, as well as country singer Randy Travis and former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords.
Words once came easily, today I struggle to speak, but I have not lost my voice.
I will always protect the city, and it's all for you.
Last month, one of Willis's most recent films premiered, A Date to Die.
Knowing what battles to fight, that's critical.
He turned 67 a week and a half ago. Demi Moore posted this picture on Instagram to celebrate the day. Willis's family writes, as Bruce always says, live it up. And together we plan to do just that.
And we've seen amazing stories of how people who have aphasia, they found other channels to express themselves through painting, through music.
In Willis's career, his movies have made $5 billion at the box office, and he's not done. At least six have already been filmed. They're coming out in the next 2 years. Shep.
Perry Russum, thank you. Well, a major setback tonight for the roughly 30,000 Americans living with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. An FDA advisory panel just voted narrowly against recommending an experimental drug for people who have ALS. The panel determined they don't have enough data to prove that the drug is actually effective. ALS weakens muscles and causes nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord to break down. Scientists say they still don't know what causes most cases of ALS, and right now there is no cure. But beyond this one disease, health experts tell us they see today's vote as a key decision for the FDA, one that tests the agency's flexibility in approving drugs for deadly diseases. CBC's Meg Terrell covers science and medicine for us. This isn't the final word, though, right, Meg?
That's right, Shep. This was just a vote from FDA's group of outside advisors. The agency itself actually makes the decision on whether to approve the drug, and that's expected to happen by the end of June. But a negative vote, of course, doesn't bode well for patients who are desperate to have access to this medicine. 24 patients or their family members testified at the meeting today, many who were in the clinical trial being discussed. One patient argued the medicine is a, quote, life-saving, life-changing drug. It's made by a small biotech company called Amylyx Pharmaceuticals, and it's a combination of two older medicines. A small clinical trial suggested it could slow the progression of ALS, and a follow-up study hinted it could even help patients live longer, an average of about 6 months. But the FDA questioned the strength of the evidence heading into today's meeting, acknowledging even in the face of such a terrible, fatal disease that needs more treatment options, that it has concerns about whether the data are strong enough to approve the drug now. Ultimately, the panel agreed, although the vote was closer than many experts watching it expected. One panelist explaining his no vote, saying, quote, it would be a disservice to the patients and their families to move ahead and approve a treatment that has uncertain benefits. It gets in the way of developing truly safe and effective treatments. Now, the FDA has gone against its advisory panels before, most notably with the controversial Alzheimer's drug it approved last year. That precedent weighed heavily on the discussions today, with some arguing it means the FDA should show similar flexibility here. But others argued the Alzheimer's approval was a bad decision and shouldn't be repeated. Now, Amylyx is running a larger trial to provide more evidence of the drug's benefit, but the results aren't expected until the end of 2023. And as fast as ALS can rob patients of their lives, many argue that's too long to wait. Shep?
Meg Terrell, thank you. President Biden got his second COVID booster shot today. He received it after announcing the launch of a new website for COVID information and resources. It's called COVID.gov. The White House billing it as a one-stop shop. The president says it'll help people find places to get vaccines and tests and treatments, even masks. The website also allows you to see how much COVID is spreading in your own community. President Biden says we're now at a new moment in the pandemic, But he insists Americans still need help from Congress. The president urged lawmakers to pass more than $22 billion in emergency funding.
Americans are back to living their lives again. We can't surrender that now. Congress, please act. The consequences of inaction are severe. They'll only grow with time. But it doesn't have to be that way.
If Congress doesn't act immediately, the president says we won't have enough money this fall to provide free shots to all Americans. The Biden administration is planning to end a controversial public health order for migrants at the southern border. It's called Title 42. We reported on this last night. The policy allows border agents to turn away people seeking asylum in the U.S. so that they don't spread COVID here. The order has restricted immigration over the past couple of years. Keep in mind, this is a public health measure. The CDC decides when to lift it. That agency is set to roll back the policy in late May. The move is expected to spark a crush of immigrants at the border, and there are growing concerns that Homeland Security won't be able to handle it. NBC's Julia Ainsley now. Julia, what is the White House saying?
Well, right now, the White House doesn't want to officially announce the end of this policy. There's a lot of fear internally, Shep, that we're hearing that they're worried that some would-be immigrants might be encouraged by this news, especially since that date of lifting it is set so far into the future, May 23rd. But sources say that is the date the CDC has recommended and DHS is making plans. The White House right now is saying that they are prepared. In fact, Kate Bedingfield, the communications director, was asked about this at the White House today. Let's take a listen.
When the CDC ultimately decides it's appropriate to lift Title 42, there will be an influx of people to the border. And so we are doing a lot of work to plan for that contingency.
So you can see they do recognize there will be an influx. Estimates are that there are about 170,000 immigrants already waiting in Mexico who haven't been able to come into the United States, and that even more could come once the word gets out. Already, Shep, unaccompanied children are not subjected to Title 42. They can come, but this would apply to families and single adults who for many years now, 2 years, have not had the chance to claim asylum when they cross the southern border.
Julia Ainsley, thank you. Well, they asked Will Smith, but he refused. New details tonight about the moments after Will Smith slapped Chris Rock at the Oscars, as the comedian takes the stage for the first time since it happened. We know who killed your sister. Words a New York woman waited 42 years to hear. The cold case cracked open thanks to genetic testing that not long ago wasn't even done in the state. Well, moments after Will Smith slapped Chris Rock on stage at the Oscars, the show organizers asked him to leave, to get out of the building, but he refused. That from the Academy just today. And now we know the Academy may soon punish Will Smith after concluding during an emergency call today that he violated the Academy's standards of conduct. That includes inappropriate physical contact, abusive or threatening behavior, and compromising the integrity of the Academy. Unless you were just born, you know that on Sunday night, Will Smith smacked Rock across the face after he made a joke about Smith's wife. Afterwards, Smith went back to his seat and screamed about his wife in the comedian's mouth. The next Academy board meeting is scheduled for April 18th, and that's when they're set to discuss possible disciplinary actions against the Best Actor winner. One option on the table, expulsion from the Academy. Now, that's rare, but not unprecedented. It's a small group that includes Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, and Roman Polanski. Meantime, comedian Chris Rock, he's set to be back on stage tonight for the first time since the slap-a-thon. He's scheduled to perform two comedy shows at the historic Wilburn Theater in Boston. Organizers will be asking everyone attending to lock up their phones during the performance. People are paying big bucks to see Chris Rock, too. According to a ticket marketplace, TickPick, the cheapest tickets for the Boston shows are selling for about $1.25, but some are for sale for as much as $1,300. Last night, Rock was spotted checking into his hotel. Cameras from NBC's Boston station caught him entering the Ritz-Carlton around 11 o'clock last night. Chris Rock has yet to comment publicly about the incident. For more than four decades, Irene Wilkowitz pushed detectives to keep investigating the murder of her sister. The case went cold back in 1980. The killer left her sister's body in a yard on Long Island. Her name was Eve. Finally, this past summer, the feds used a relatively new kind of DNA tracing to track down her murderer. It's the same technique that police used to identify the notorious Golden State Killer in 2018. Investigators say they used genealogical DNA. It's collected in databases like MyHeritage and FamilyTree DNA. People send their DNA to a company to help them find distant relatives or their family history. Well, the feds found a distant match to DNA discovered on Eve's body. That information landed them on a suspect. They asked the suspect's son for a DNA swab, and then they say he willingly handed it over. It confirmed his father was the killer. But to be extra sure, about a week ago, nearly 42 years to the day after Eve's murder, they exhumed the body. The DNA was a match. CBC's Valerie Castro now on the emotional close to the case.
I still can't believe that I heard those words. We've identified the person responsible for the death of Eve. And I really wish my dad were still alive so he could be here too.
Clutching pictures of her parents, Irene Wilkowitz can now rest, knowing the man who murdered her sister Eve in 1980 has been identified.
I've lived these past 42 years afraid all the time that I was going to be killed next. I always thought someone was just right around the corner coming after me, too.
Investigators say 20-year-old Eve Wilkowitz left her job as a secretary in New York City the night of March 22nd and took a late-night train from Penn Station to her usual stop in Bayshore, Long Island. But somewhere along her walk home from the train station to her apartment on Fifth Avenue, Wilkowitz vanished. 3 days later, her body was found on Center Avenue, just blocks away from her home. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled.
There was a rape kit analysis performed, and due to the technology at the time, no donor profile, no DNA profile was able to be obtained.
Decades would pass without any leads, but advances in DNA technology kept putting investigators one step closer. At the urging of Eve's sister Irene, they eventually used genetic genealogy to track down a relative of the suspect. That led them to Herbert Rice, who died in 1991. Police say Rice had been staying at a home just a few doors down from where Wilkowitz's body was discovered in a yard.
We know that Mr. Rice would often spend time at the train station, frequently drinking, and we believe that it was, you know, unfortunately, it was a crime of opportunity.
Irene says her relief is mixed with sadness.
She never got a chance to fulfill her dreams. She never got to be a mom, a wife, an aunt, or a friend to me.
Knowing nothing will bring her sister back. For the news, I'm Valerie Castro.
Four men are on trial accused of plotting to kidnap the governor of Wisconsin. And now, I meant to say the governor of Michigan. And now the FBI is investigating death threats against the judge and defense lawyers. That's according to the reporting of the Detroit News. The newspaper reports federal agents raided a home in suburban Detroit on Friday in connection with the threats, but that they didn't make any arrests. You can see them carrying out boxes of evidence. Meantime, the prosecution has rested its case in the trial. Prosecutors say the suspects were plotting to obtain explosives to blow up a bridge near Governor Gretchen Whitmer's vacation home to slow down the police response during a planned abduction. An alleged co-conspirator who pleaded guilty said they even constructed a shoot house that resembled the vacation home so that they could practice storming it. The defense team claims there was no plot at all. They say it was all just crazy talk fueled by marijuana use and that undercover agents and informers egged them on. President Biden's Supreme Court nominee now has some Republican support. Senator Susan Collins of Maine says she'll vote yes to confirm Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's the first and only GOP senator so far to break ranks and announce support for Judge Jackson.
In the end, I decided that she had the qualifications, the experience, and the credentials that we require of a Supreme Court justice and warranted my support.
That is the test. Despite a split Senate, Democrats don't need any votes from Republicans to confirm Judge Jackson. Vice President Harris would cast a tie-breaking vote. But now they can say the nominee has at least some bipartisan support. The Webb telescope is up and running, but don't count out the Hubble. The discovery that it just made that NASA is calling one for the books. Plus, a fugitive flamingo spotted 17 years after it escaped from a zoo. But that doesn't mean his life on the lam has come to an end. And foiled by feces. An armed robbery suspect tracked down and arrested thanks to a very distinct poop stain on his shirt. It's official. Coach Shaheen Holloway is leaving St. Peter's. He's headed to Seton Hall in the Big East. Just got word the last hour. Coach Holloway set to return to his alma mater. He was a standout player for the Hall and took the Pirates to the Sweet 16 back in 2000. Of course, Coach Holloway just led St. Peter's Peacocks to the Elite Eight, the first 15 seed ever to make it that far. NASA astronaut Mark Vandehei is back on Earth now after a historic mission in space. The astronaut setting the NASA record for the longest single space flight ever. Here he is just moments after arriving on Earth. And just how long was he in space? 355 days. According to NASA, this beats the previous record held by the retired astronaut Scott Kelly by 15 days. Despite current tensions between the U.S. and Russia, Vandehei arrived home on a Russian spacecraft. Two Russian cosmonauts returned with him, political issues set aside, to make history in the stars. And speaking of stars, the iconic Hubble Space Telescope making a major discovery. NASA has just announced it spotted the most distant star ever seen. Here's a look at the star that NASA is calling Arendelle. The name translates to morning star in Old English. And old is Arendelle. Apparently, it formed less than a billion years after the Big Bang. The newly discovered star knocking down the previous record holder for the farthest star. The light of that star, named Icarus, or Icarus, I should say, took 9 billion years to reach Earth. Arendelle took nearly 13 billion years. The discovery comes as the rival James Webb Telescope captured this stunning first-of-its-kind image just of another star just weeks ago. Now scientists are trying to figure out just what this newest Hubble discovery could mean for the future of astronomy. NASA scientist Dr. Michelle Thaler now. Michelle, experts say this star is much further than the previous most distant star. How did this happen, and what does this discovery tell us?
Well, this was a wonderful coincidence of nature. There is a cluster of galaxies that's closer to us. It's only about 5 billion light years away, and I know that doesn't sound very close. But all of the mass of that cluster, many, many hundreds of galaxies, is actually warping space and time itself. This is something predicted by Albert Einstein 100 years ago. And all of that space, incredibly, is warping into a natural telescope, a telescope made of space and time. And way on the other side of the universe, just conveniently lined up, we think it's just a coincidence, we're looking back at a star whose light left 12.9 billion years to go to get to us today.
Man, that is incredible. The James Webb Telescope has been making major headlines lately. What does this discovery mean for the future of the Hubble?
Well, the Hubble telescope amazingly is going strong after nearly 32 years. And the Webb telescope, which launched in December, is going to follow on in Hubble's footsteps. Take this star, for example. Hubble found this star, but Webb can see it much, much better. We're going to be able to find out how hot the star is, how massive it is, what the chemistry of the star is, all by using the Webb telescope. So the two are working in conjunction very well right now.
It feels like this is a really extraordinary moment.
Oh, absolutely. The goals of the Webb telescope are to actually see back in time so far that we see the first generation of stars, the first galaxies form. And luckily for us, Hubble used this gravitational lens to pick up one very, very far away. And that bodes well for Webb. We know those stars are out there and we can really see stars that far back in time.
When you saw it, were folks at NASA like, I can't even believe this?
Well, at first, I have to say I was skeptical, as any good scientist should be. You sort of say, well, wait a minute, how do you know that's a star? How do you know it's not some big cluster of stars or even a galaxy? At that distance, we can barely see even entire galaxies. But then the data came in and it became more and more convincing. And I realized, wow, you know, there was a cosmic coincidence. And this star so far away was actually magnified thousands of times brighter than it should be because of a natural lensing of space and time itself.
Michelle Thaler, Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Fenway Park is going green. The Boston Red Sox announcing plans today to make their home games carbon neutral. They're believed to be the first team in the MLB to make such a pledge. The Red Sox partnering with a climate finance company called Aspiration. Now the team will use a portion of each ticket sale to buy carbon offsets. Those credits go toward climate initiatives such as renewable energy projects. And the goal, counteract things at the ballpark that impact the environment, like electricity and water use. The team reports fans will not pay an extra cent for the service. A fugitive flamingo has been spotted in Texas after 17 years on the fly. The bird, known creatively as number 492, that's the tag number on its leg band. The nickname is better, Pink Floyd. In 2005, Pink and another flamingo escaped the Sedgwick County Zoo in Kansas. The accomplice is still in the wind. But just last week, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department posted this video of 492 out in the wild after they spotted the numbers on the leg band. The zoo in Kansas has no plans to capture 492. Officials there say there's really no easy way to get the bird back without disturbing all the other wildlife. And this isn't the first Pink Floyd sighting. The flamingos turned up several times over the past few years with other sightings in Texas, Louisiana, and even one report that it made it all the way to Wisconsin. It's possible they can fly 400 miles in a single night. The poop gave them away. Miami police have identified an armed robbery suspect with the help of some dog do. He's 62-year-old William Carroll. Police say he tried to rob a woman with a knife while she was walking her dog, but he took off with the, well, evidence all over him. Miami PD said the victim stopped on these stairs to pick up the dog's poop. As she went to grab it, Carroll pulled out his knife and started to strangle her. Police say Carroll got away with the victim's wallet and credit cards. He initially told the cops he wasn't involved in that robbery at all, but his shirt, say the police, proved him a liar and a thief. And a police report, officers wrote, a brownish stain was seen on the defendant's shirt matching the dog poop from the scene. Police arrested Carroll for armed robbery and battery. He's being held without bond in the Miami County Jail. It's unclear whether he's hired an attorney. 40 seconds on a race to the finish. Vladimir Putin's top advisors have been misleading him about the invasion, not telling him how terribly it's going because they're afraid to give him the truth, according to a new U.S. intelligence assessment. Severe storms ripping the South right now. National Weather Service confirms one touchdown in Jackson, Mississippi. And Bruce Willis stepping away from acting. His family says Dr. diagnosed the movie star with aphasia. And now, you know the news of this Wednesday, March the 30th, 2022. I'm Shepard Smith. Thanks for checking in. Hope to see you back here tomorrow night for the news on CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.